You are very welcome along to the Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio for this Wednesday, the 15th of April, 6 minutes past nine. Lee Gooch just was telling me as the news was playing there that his alternator started working again in Ballybofane. Him and his mum were able to stick on the windscreen wipers, the heaters, and had a fabulous 25 minutes home, which is good. Hey, you're very welcome along to the show. It's Wednesday, the 15th of April. I did mention that, didn't I? The lines are open for you right now to get involved in the conversation. Start your own. Pass on some information. Maybe pass on some good news as well. We like to cover everything here. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp, and that is the text number, 086 60 25,000. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And that means if you're listening to the podcast or the overnight replay, please feel free to get in touch with us and we'll carry over your views to the next live programme. And just a reminder of the podcast for you, if you don't mind. Of course, it's available on Highland Radio in the listen back section, but it's also available on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts as well. So if you can give us a like and a subscribe there, if you ever miss anything or want to listen back to previous episodes, they're all there on those platforms, and you get your new episode delivered into your inbox at around about 11:30 every single day. And it also carries the Greg Hughes podcast. It's the sister podcast to this show, and we've got new episodes coming out every Friday morning at 11 a.m. And just looking through the release schedule for the next 4 or 5 weeks, we have some amazing people, not least this Friday, where I speak to Mary Doherty, who is really quite an amazing woman. She is effectively responsible for establishing the organisation that became Lifeline Inishowen, and recently received a very prestigious award for all of her efforts, and received €20,000 in the process and donated it to Lifeline Inishowen now that she has stepped away. But it is a fascinating conversation into insights to life, I suppose, really in the 90s, the early 90s and through to now, and attitudes to domestic violence, and some real fascinating insights. But it's also getting to know Mary too, who really is a very special lady. So that podcast is available at 11 o'clock on Friday. There's a preview up on my social media, by the way, if you just want to get a clip and get a sense of what we'll be talking about. But as I say, that's just the latest episode in a string of really... and there's a mixture too as well. I mean, you know, the podcast is an opportunity to help people who've been through very difficult circumstances to mark those circumstances if some time has passed, or to try and get, you know, a bit of public awareness out about certain things. But also too, we're going to have a very interesting podcast coming up with the professor from, or the doctor from down the south of the county, Inver, who was instrumental in the Apollo 11 moon mission. We had him on for about 4.5 minutes, and I says, we're going to have to do longer. I want to learn more about your role and how you came to be involved with that, and perhaps maybe talk more broadly about space exploration. So that's going to be coming up in the not too distant future as well on the Greg Hughes podcast. So really exciting times. And as I say, it's available, those podcasts, all of them, and some very, very important, I think, and interesting conversations. They're all available for you on Spotify, The Greg Hughes Show. Search that. The podcast is in amongst the show, so it's all there for you on Apple and also on our own website. But please give us a like or a subscribe or a comment too. It'd be nice, or a rating. It all helps. Let's have a look at the papers for today. We'll start with the local that I have that's out, the Finn Valley Voice. Solar generation isn't just eco-friendly, it's financially savvy. That was the message that Bord Gáis Energy shared last night in its solar summer campaign. Now, a Lifford-based meat processing company is taking them at the word. C&J Meats of Clonlea is applying for permission to erect a solar-powered system at their Finn Valley plant. The news comes at a time when there's unprecedented anxiety over the future of energy supplies across Ireland. And I suppose that's all intertwined with the national news as well. You will have heard, I presume, the government survived the vote of no confidence. The Dáil has passed the government's second package of fuel reliefs, which it says has the best consumer supports in Europe, which it has to be said, probably does. It comes after a fracas three-hour confidence debate as the coalition held firm against a threatened general election, despite losing junior minister Michael Healy-Ray and the vote of his brother Danny Healy-Ray. The final margin of victory was 14 votes, with the government prevailing 92-78, showing it still has a comfortable majority. Among the new measures being introduced are a reduction in the cost of auto diesel by 10 cent, bringing the total reduction of diesel to 32 cent, with petrol reduced by 10 cent, bringing its price down to 27 cent, or down by 27 cent. And I'm not being an apologist, I'm trying to get the information out there. It's very likely if you pull into a filling station today that they purchased the petrol or diesel at the old rates. So they'll be selling it at the current price, the current list price. And we're told that as they get new orders in and the petrol stations with the bigger throughput, you'll see the 10 cent come down quicker. But you could have a local station to you that won't fill its tanks till next Tuesday or Wednesday, and they bought it at the higher rate of duty. So you won't see the saving necessarily. It depends. I don't know how quickly they go through their tanks. But it's not one of those things whereby it changes at midnight, because they're effectively a levy on the fuel they've already purchased. There were separate supports passed for green and red diesel, special schemes for haulage and agriculture, and a delay to the planned carbon tax increase due on May 1st at a cost of $22 million. All the excise reductions will continue and until the beginning of July, when hospitality VAT rates fall from 13.5% to 9%. Now, oil is steadily at the moment under 100 euro per barrel, if you're keeping an eye on those types of things, and that's potentially good for us. Hopefully that Strait of Hormuz is fully open very, very shortly. But at the moment, oil steady under 100. If it stays like that, those reductions will eventually filter through. And as I say, some service stations are quicker to drop than others. It depends on when they get their price for refilling the tanks, you see, from the wholesalers. Slow-moving convoys caused traffic disruption in Belfast and elsewhere as a number of fuel protests were held in the north yesterday. They're following on really from the protests in the Republic. A large convoy of around 35 tractors, lorries and trucks with flashing lights travelled along both lanes on the A1 towards Belfast yesterday evening, while disruption was also reported near Ballygawley in Tyrone. At around noon, traffic clogged up the Sindelian bypass near Belfast City Airport, hours after passengers were warned there may be disruptions. It then travelled down the bypass in the direction of Bangor County down towards Belfast City Airport, with some cars undercutting them on the cycle route to get past on the inside. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, I can't imagine there'll be any significant changes in Northern Ireland, Britain as a whole, Britain plus Northern Ireland, and whether you like it or not. It is Westminster that runs Northern Ireland. They have their own problems because they're talking about cutting welfare, cutting payments to people, because they feel the British part of the UK, they feel that they need to significantly up their spend on defence, and they're looking to make some really quite drastic changes to welfare to fund that. And it feels an awful long way from Northern Ireland, but of course, that's the real seats of power are in London. So I'm not sure how successful that campaign might be, especially considering reports that Britain could run out of diesel and or could start having to restrict diesel and aeroplane fuel, jet fuel or whatever it's called, in a couple of weeks. They're getting really tight. Petrol's fine, but they're getting really tight on diesel and jet fuel over there. Minister for Media, Patrick O'Donovan, who we talked about towards the end of the programme yesterday, the NUJ weren't happy with his calling into question the coverage of the protests, and he'd sought a meeting with Commissioner Mann, and he wanted an investigation into it all. Well, Minister for Media, Patrick O'Donovan, is not seeking a review of media coverage of the fuel protests, despite his previous suggestions that he would. O'Donovan came in for criticism after he told a number of regional radio stations on Monday that he planned to raise his concerns about the fairness and balance of some media coverage with regulator Commissioner Mann the Media Commission. His comments were described as sinister and deeply disturbing by the National Union of Journalists, which we heard yesterday. And yesterday, O'Donovan met the media regulator, but the meeting did not result in a formal review of coverage being ordered. A spokesperson for O'Donovan later said the minister isn't seeking a review of media coverage following his constructive engagement with Commissioner Mann. So he's spun that, I suppose you could say, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, spun that as something of a victory. It's wonderful to see, albeit in devastating circumstances, it's wonderful to see such a broad celebration of our own Moya Brennan, who very sadly we lost on Monday. The news would have came too late on Monday to make the newspapers yesterday, but every single newspaper that I have seen has wonderful coverage, and in some cases front page coverage of Moya Brennan and her contribution, etc. And also it was great to see her getting the recognition she so richly deserves nationally as well on radio and TV and what have you. I'll just read some of the coverage in the Irish Daily Mail. Tributes have been paid to iconic Clannad singer Moya Brennan, who has died at the age of 73. A family statement said the musician and songwriter with the Grammy Award winning Celtic fusion pioneers died peacefully surrounded by loved ones. They said, "We are completely heartbroken at the passing of our dearest sister Myra. She crossed over last night at home in Donegal surrounded by family and has now joined Padraig and Noel across the Vale. Her voice was the signature sound of Clannad and we will live on forever." U2's Bono was among the first to pay tribute, saying she had an otherworldly voice. "She sang like an angel," he said. "She walked through this world like an angel and now she's back with her own kind. We love you, Moya." And that was just one of the many, many tributes to Moya. Right, now, this makes sense because I could never understand why the public services card was no good as ID, because you had to prove who you were so vigorously to get it in the first place. But now it seems it is going to be used as ID. I don't know if you think this is good or bad news. People will soon be able to use their public service card as a valid form of ID. More than 1 million people currently hold a PSC, which is used to help access a number of state services such as social welfare. Despite the document being backed by state services, it is currently not allowed to be used as a valid form of official ID by banks and utility companies. Crazy stuff, but that's going to change. And finally, the new generation's attitude to marriage and having children. It's not fantastic because we do need people to have children to keep the world going. That is a fact. Getting married and having children have long been important life goals for many, but it seems today's teenagers are bucking the trend. A survey found only half of 13 to 16-year-olds, though, I mean, asking 13-year-olds about having babies and getting married, but anyway, it's fine. It's what they did. A survey found only half of 13 to 16-year-olds who are part of Generation Alpha say tying the knot is important, and just 56% really want to have children, but sure, they're children themselves. Instead, the others have their sights on securing financial independence, building a network of close friends, and getting on the property ladder. But despite a clear vision for their future, only half of Generation Alpha teenagers said they feel ready for adult life. Just 51% of the near 700 young teenagers surveyed about what they wanted to achieve in life claimed getting married is important. And I think really what I found interesting about that survey is the importance of our role as adults and parents and guardians in the lives of young people. Because here's a group of young people, half of them don't know what they want, they don't feel they're ready for adulthood. Yep, they make, or we allow them to make, some really, really big life decisions. And I think that survey is quite pointed in emphasising the importance of our role as parents to say, do you know what, maybe you don't know what's best. Maybe you are 13 to 16-year-old and you need guidance and you need help and you don't need necessarily, you know, broad endorsement of every single thought that comes into your head. I think in terms of driving ICE engines, internal combustion engines, and refueling them, there is a little bit of an established rules and regs, you know, decorum, standard practice. I wonder if it's the same with EVs. Stephen, you are an EV driver. You had an interesting, if I could put it like that, experience recently. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, we did, surely. It was in Monaghan. We were going on holidays and we stopped in Monaghan, you know, just for coffee, and there was nobody on the charger. So we said, just we'll plug in now, sure, may as well charge her up a bit when we're going, because you might need it anyway, but that's all right. We had her coffee and we're sitting outside watching this Dublin taxi man, which knows what he's doing, and reversed him beside us, but he didn't get close enough to get the lead out of our car into his car. Right, so it took him a good wee minute, and even the wife was going to say to him, go over and say to him that he couldn't work the charger or something.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. He couldn't work the charger, but he knew what he was doing. Thing.
So he pulled the charger out of your car and plugged it into his own?
Yes. Put it into his own, yes. And he had two women along with him, and they stood between the two cars. Which the camera then, I didn't go to the camera because I was going on my holidays, and I wasn't interested in handling, you know what I mean? But the two women stood in between the two cars, so couldn't show him, actually. I wouldn't have seen him on the cameras, taking out the lead. But only on the fast chargers, right, there's an emergency stop button on them. And once you push it, that's the only way you can release our car.
That's what I was going to ask you, because if it's not a fast charger until such time as you stop it, it is locked into the charging port.
It's locked in now.
So that's a fault, isn't it? It's open to exploitation.
It's open, yes, and it's commonly known about Dublin, commonly done about Dublin. But he's seen us in a DL car, and we wouldn't know what we're. And I went over to him and said, well, that's funny. I said, hey, that lead there was plugged into my car, now it's plugged into your. Are you accusing me, are you? I said, are you accusing me? That's one way of just saying it's plugged into our car, now it's in your car. I can't say, well, of course, but. But I mean, I could do nothing about it. It says, maybe it's auto stop in your car or something, whatever the issue he's talking about.
Well, try not to swear too much for me, Stephen, if you don't mind. I know you're passionate about it, but apologies to listeners, but go on.
I was mad going up the road. I thought what I should have done, what I would have done. But the reason was why I didn't get too mad with him is because I didn't need the kilometres. I didn't need them.
But come here, when he disengaged your car and plugged it into his own, you weren't paying for his power at that point, because I haven't used
I think we were. I think we were, because our card was empty then. There was nothing left in our card. We had maybe 30 or 40 euro in our card.
That's very serious, that, isn't
it? He took our money as well.
Yeah, and he knew what he's doing. As you say, push the emergency stop. It's the only way to release the charger from your port.
Fast chargers.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. On the other charger, you can't do it.
But you said you were lucky you didn't need the kilometres. But say you didn't sit by the window and weren't looking. You could have come out and your car could have been sitting on 10% or something.
If I needed them to get to the airport, I'll tell you what, there would have been a handling. There would have been definitely a handling. You know what I mean? I wouldn't have left it till I'd sorted it out, you know. But I didn't need them. It was only just that, just because there was nobody on it and we went for coffee. We were sitting outside watching them, and barefaced.
They used two people to obscure it so you couldn't see.
Obscured as well, yes. They stood in between the two cars so you couldn't see when he had taken the lead out of our car. You wouldn't have seen him. Even if I went to the cameras, you wouldn't have seen him.
A caller says, Sean in Manchester is listening. He says, you can press the emergency button to stop the charge and then you can plug yours in. So there are people out there that know about it. This hasn't happened to you before, but I think there's a special set of circumstances. They maybe thought you were from the sticks and didn't really know how things worked, Stephen.
That's exactly what I said. Colt chief from Donegal. You wouldn't know nothing about it, but only if I had known. I wouldn't let him away with it.
Yeah. You've had the electric car for 4 years, so obviously you're a fan, Stephen.
Oh, God, it was a great time. Like I say, that car went to Dublin and back, and I only put 30 kilometres on her. That's all that man gave me, was 30 kilometres. But she came back with 40 kilometres on her,
Wow, okay.
That's Dublin and back, and all I needed was 30.
Well done, okay, good. Come back good information.
With 40,
I think they're going to have to sort that out because it's obviously a known exploit here now. And that fella stole money for you. That's like stealing petrol or diesel from a petrol station. That's what he did.
That's right.
Okay. Right. Interesting.
He had no qualms with it.
You were in the wrong. Your car auto stopped. That's what he would have you believe.
Yeah, because he pushed. That's right.
Okay.
That's right. But like I say, I wasn't going to get into a fight over it, because. Other than if I needed them, I didn't need them.
Are you back from your holidays? Back from your holidays, or are you on your holidays? Where did you go?
No, back. We're in New York time.
Oh, wow. Okay, good stuff.
5 days, 6 days in New York. It's great.
You don't have the horrors now.
Not about, no.
Good not man. Stephen, listen, thanks for the heads up.
Definitely not.
It's just to get let other people know that this can happen. All right, look after yourself. That's Stephen there. On to more traditional fuel. How is it fair, says or asks a listener, how is it fair that companies can put up their prices before they bring them down? They buy the fuel for a lower price and sell it even higher. How is this fair? I don't know how it's fair. As far as I can understand, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, they charge what it will cost to replace what's in the tanks at any given time. So if the wholesaler puts it up 10 cent, even before they receive that order, I think they put it up 10 cent. That's as far as I can determine. There's different ways that different stations buy their fuel. Some just get a 3.1 standard per litre on the fuel, whatever it is, and they don't really control that price. They could put it up to €5 a litre and they still only get 3.1 cent. It depends on their relationship with their supplier. If there's someone in there that gives us a better insight, because I feel like I'm being almost, it's like I'm a spokesperson of the fuel industry, which I don't want to be, but it's to try and offer answers to people with genuine questions. My understanding is that they charge what it will cost them to replace the petrol that you're just about to buy. Well, that doesn't feel right, but anyway. I'm in shock with my bill, says a listener, and I just don't know how I can afford to run our home. The cost of heating home oil or home heating oil, 500 litres just over a month ago, 480. Yesterday, 870. The VAT has gone from 57 to 103 on 500 litres. The government are gaining €46 per fill on VAT. Shocking. We're struggling as it is. Something has to change when you can't afford to have a basic need such as heat satisfied and the government are getting an extra profit. Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. When we heard yesterday from Carmel, where we're at a point now where, you know, say for instance, it's not just residential homes, and I think really there's a lot of people with empty tanks that are actually just trying to limp through till the temperatures go up, but also to you know, community halls, other large spaces that have to be heated, especially if they serve the needs of the elderly. They're at the point where they can't actually themselves, because they're voluntary, fill their tanks. And we heard yesterday in Manor Cunningham the concern that unless something is done or something happens, then some of these facilities might close. The people that run them will move heaven and earth to ensure that doesn't happen. But that's where we're at. This is like a major, major crisis, but it doesn't feel like it's being treated like a crisis, particularly the home heating oil side of it. 800,000 of us use home heating oil. We don't have an alternative. But it doesn't seem to be the national crisis that it feels like if you're living it. Got a message in from an eagle-eared listener.
Greg might need to check his watch there. It's not 22 minutes past four. I wish it was.
How did I think it was 22 minutes past four? Do you know what? If I'd said 10 or 8, it might have put the willies up people. But I think that I said it was such a ridiculous time in the afternoon. We'll be okay. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for keeping me straight. My apologies. I'm sure we're okay. Rightio. Anna is with me now. Hi, Anna.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Right. Now, Anna, what are we talking about here? What's the situation you're facing?
Well, Greg, I just want to first of all say that, like, the protesters, like, I can't commend them enough, you know, for what they're doing. I actually lost faith in this government a long time ago. So my child is neurodivergent. And I'm sure, like, over the last number of weeks, everybody knows about the SNAs and about the cuts that the government was looking to bring in and stuff to an SNA, which is a child's lifeline. There is a process, it's called the Assessment of Needs Process, which is carried out by the HSC, and it identifies children's needs and what health services are needed to meet the child's needs.
So give us an example of the findings of the Assessment of Need might be, because I want to make sure that everyone understands completely, because I know the assessments of needs will determine, is it for school, outside of school, speech and language?
So assessment of need will be conducted to see what needs that a child needs. Like, for example, do they need physiotherapy? Do they need speech and language? Do they need OT? Now, remembering, Greg, that the assessment of need is it's statutory. So it's under the Disability Act 2005, under Section 5. So this is something that the government have put into statutory. And the assessment of need, so my story is back in 2023, I applied for an assessment of need for my son to determine what supports he would need. This was prior to an assessment for neurodivergency. So it says on citizens' information and on the statutory website that the application must be started within 3 months and that the application must be completed within 6 months. Now, I applied in 2023, and today is we're into the 15th of April 2026, and I'm still waiting on my child's assessment of need report.
But that's very difficult.
That's nearly 3 years.
I mean, that's a failure of the country, I think. But like these are the formative years. These are the very important years whereby your son gets all the assistance that he needs and doesn't get assistance that he doesn't need to ensure he can maximise his potential. And these are the best years for that to be done.
Well, Greg, like I did submit, so Have Your Say under the HSC. It's a platform where you can go on to put in complaints. I've put in 3 complaints about that my son's assessment of need report was not completed within 6 months. And I've only ever been received feedback once.
Right.
I am constantly on the phone to the AON officer, the assessment of needs officer, and she just keeps apologising. She is bombarded. And I don't blame her, Greg. I blame the government. Like in another example, my son, because my son has what's called developmental coordination disorder, OT is imperative for him.
Uh-huh.
And my son, a year and a half ago, was called for a review for with OT. I received a phone call last week for a follow-up appointment on that. So this government hasn't just started failing in the last couple of months. This government has been failing since 2023. And to the most vulnerable age group within our society, children.
But it's for families like yours, it's a battle. Even the diagnostic process is a battle. It's a series
Greg,
of battles.
It is. It was 2 years of battling and battling. I know CAMHS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, has also been put out there on social media and on the news, like the hardships I had to go through to get him into CAMHS. Mm. It was going to the doctor, being denied access, back to the doctor, being denied access. It came to the point one day where I had to ring them up and say, what do you need me to do for you to see my child? And then I had to drive my child to Belfast to be assessed because there is no assessment services here. So the reason why I wanted to come on, like I fully support the protests. Like people are being choked in every way possible. And like I'm going through this the last 3 years that the government is failing. I've put in my complaints and basically, oh, we're sorry. Mm. Like, how can a government do that? Like, to be honest with you, yesterday now, like, if I had been in the role, I'd have been definitely voting no confidence. You know, a TD came to me, you know, before the elections, and they were off a party who I knew was heavily involved in the government for years and years, and I said, what have you been doing for children with additional needs? And that TD looked at me and, oh, I know, once we get into the Dáil. And I said, but you have been in the Dáil.
Yeah.
And this party has been in the Dáil for years. And nothing is changing. Like, it's a statutory right that has to be done within 6 months. It will be 3 years now coming in October of this year, and I still have yet to receive a report. For every bit of services he's got, a support he's got in school, I've had to fight myself.
Which is exhausting, that you have to become a parent and a campaigner to, is there any part of you gets frustrated that, you know, we're all affected by the fuel and it has overwhelming support and you support them, but does it ever frustrate you that it's like a constant everyday individual battle for you, that in other words, if you could get the message across like you are now, if the nation as a whole were to say it's unacceptable if our children are being treated like this, that this could be the straw that breaks a camel's back? You know what I mean? I know speaking to people over the years, it can be a very lonely battle.
Greg, it's soul destroying. That's the only way I can put it. You're constantly on the phone. You're being passed from pillar to post. You know, you're hearing apologies, you're going on to a forum that the government has set up, Have Your Say. I put in 3 complaints and I've had one come back and, oh, we apologise. Mm. Like, that's no good to me. Like, any supports that my child has in school, I've had to pay for a private assessment. I've been, for about 2 years, I've been on the phone to CAMHS and to, like, the OT and different departments within the HSE, which the government are in charge of. Like, and if this is my family, like, how many other... You see it all the time, Greg, on social media. Many families are... You know, so this government, and for my family, this government has been failing them for at least 3 years.
Well,
and they talk about, you know, the government's talking about, you know, early intervention is key and the fundamental years of a child. But they're failing children.
And whilst you're waiting 3 years, it's open-ended. You've no dates. You have no feedback or contact, or you have no idea when your child might be assessed.
I was speaking, well, my child has been assessed, but the only thing that's waiting now is the assessment of need report.
Sorry, yes.
Speaking to the assessment and need officer, I'd say about 6 weeks ago, and I was like, I'm just ringing up, just inquiring about my child's report. And they were like, oh, yeah, we nearly have it done. But I've been here nearly have it done for the last year. You know, I'm not saying, oh, my child, you know, leave everybody else's child and look about my child. It'll be 3 years now in October. Mm-hmm. And under the Disability Act, it must be completed within 6 weeks. And then there's the government then. They're choking everybody. Like, I've lost all faith in that government.
Right, okay. I understand your frustration. I really do. Because we speak about it a lot. I hope things improve, Anna. And even if you were heard, even if you got a response back, I think that might feel like something is happening, even though it wouldn't necessarily address what you're talking about. Listen, thanks for your time, and I hope things improve greatly.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you very much indeed. And that's it. I mean, a mom, campaigner, advocate, fighter, you know, it's very, very tough for parents. And we should be doing all we can. Maybe the government argue we are doing all we can, but I mean, I can only listen to Anna and listen to her story, and people can make up their own minds. I just want to mention, if I can, Eamon McGee from Downings. He is doing the Mizzen to Mallon cycle. It starts on the 16th of May, and he's raising money and awareness for the Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind. And he's holding a races night in the Carrigart Hotel in Carrigart. This coming Saturday night, it's the 18th, and he's looking to raise money, of course, for a very worthy cause. So if you want a night out with a little bit of a difference, then get along to the Carrigart Hotel this Saturday night in Carrigart and support Eamon McGee's racing night, a night at the races. They're good fun, you know. Even if you don't gamble, they're good fun. And it is to support his cycle from Mizzen to Mallon on the 16th of May. But the races night is this Saturday night, the 18th. So a good night's crack, and also to supporting a very worthy cause. Would video camera be enough to prove the electric fuel was being stolen, I wonder? Yeah, but I mean... Where would you mean, like, if they videoed it on the phone, or then you'd have to start getting access? My impression from Stephen is that he got away, you know, he got away in his holidays and he's back now, and he's not really, doesn't fancy pursuing it, but just wanting to let other people know that this happens. It's the fast chargers. You bang the emergency stop button, and it appears that the taxi driver was able then to steal his juice off his card. That's a massive flaw in the system. If you have any other insights or experiences into that, let us know. 086 60 25000 or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Right, let's go to Jack Murray, Councillor Jack Murray, now, who has been raising the issue of the slab road. So for those of us who would not be intimately familiar, is this the road where you turn left, say, for instance, going to Buncrana at Burt Chapel, you sort of an inverted L, and then you come out in Burt Village, Jack?
That's it, yeah. It connects Village Burnfoot to Burt, so it's the main connection at this moment in time between the two biggest towns in County Donegal, Buncrana and Letterkenny. And in recent months, particularly, there's been some very, very serious accidents where cars emerging from the slab road at Burt Chapel have been hit and caused serious damage.
It's a nightmare of an exit, that it really is.
it is. You're coming from a steep hill, often backed up with traffic, and the vision lanes aren't great. So when you come on then, you're on the N13, which is a national road with traffic going 100 kilometres an hour, and unfortunately sometimes even faster than that. So it's extremely dangerous. So I've asked that the council will look at this and come up with a solution to make it safe. Now, I acknowledge former councillor John Ryan, and one of the last proposals he had made before he stepped down as a councillor was that the road becomes one way if you're travelling from Letterkenny towards Moncrana, so you just be going left down that road.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I had my own reservations about that, but I just think in recent months, the seriousness of the accidents, the frequency of the accidents, I just don't want it in my conscience that if there was a fatality that we did do everything we could to make that safe.
So, yeah, but is that not really the last resort? Surely, I think that area, it'd be no harm for traffic to slow down significantly in any case. Would it not be better to try and address the speed of the traffic and the safety of that junction rather than, you know, the one way option?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I would love to see that. I'd love to see if the road could be expanded, the gradient decreased, and you could install a roundabout there, which would slow the traffic and allow safe entrance onto the road and exit from the road. But as you'd be aware, it's a national road, so it falls under the remit of the TAA. Now, the TAA have said that they have no plans to carry out any safety improvements at that road at this moment in time. So I think the only option really to the council to act within our own gift is to control the road that we do, which is the slab road, and to make it one way. Now, I don't want anybody to be concerned and thinking this is going to happen tomorrow or it's just going to be installed and everything's going to change. I've asked that the council will go to public consultation. Well, there's one of the biggest employers in Donegal, and Vertis, formerly E&I Engineering, is at the bottom of the slab road. There's businesses there. As we say, it's the main artery between the two biggest towns in Donegal, so we'll have serious consequences.
Yeah, but there is a safer alternative, I suppose, the other two sides of the square, if I could put it like that. How much longer is the journey travelling straight on up to the roundabout and then turning left into Burt Village? How much longer is that compared to using the slab road? I don't need inches, but just to get a sense with local knowledge, Jack.
It's minimal, minutes, if not less. And I put up on social media and some people said it's even quicker, because if you're stuck in traffic trying to get on to Burt Chapel, you could be around by Bridgend. You just go through the roundabout and around. People have commented that they're up in there quicker. The people that had left at the same time were still on the slab road. So I don't think it would be that bad at all. And look, if it makes the road safer, if it prevents somebody losing their life on that road, then look, I think it would be worth it. And I've also proposed that you could still maintain the side of the road at the end of the road in the Burnt Foot side, where there's a huge amount of traffic comes into Vertiv there, the car parks and the local businesses there. There's a cafe and a tile shop there, but that could still remain.
You go one way below them, effectively.
You'd meet a point there where it's one way from then on. Look, I think it would be much, much safer, and I think the delays, if any, would be minimal. Now, there's legitimate concerns that people have raised.
Do you see at the corner there, the corner of the slab road, where does that road lead to?
At Grange Levels.
It's a popular destination, is it not?
Extremely popular. Like,
You'd leave people accessing that, depending where they're from, with a much greater journey potential. Not when I say much greater, I don't want to be dramatic. An extra 10 minutes, perhaps. Would people be happy enough with that?
I don't think it even would be 10 minutes.
Okay,
closer to 5 minutes. It's a small loop around there. Look, there's no perfect solution to this. There's going to be an inconvenience in some way. And as I say, people have raised very legitimate concerns, and I'll be asking those legitimate concerns are taken on board. And if there's any solution, look, I'm not an engineer, but we're working with the engineers, people, you know.
It's crazy, though, that we have to throw our hands up and say the TAI won't do anything or can't do anything soon. I mean, like, we've got local knowledge here. We understand the junction. We understand the benefits maybe of improving that. You know, we're seeing something similar down in Lahey at the moment, where after years and years and years of campaigning, finally a roundabout is being put in place at the junction there. It will take you to Pettigo. You know, why are the TAI so insulated, so siloed? I mean, you know, there should be some mechanism whereby the views of the council are weighted to speed things up where it needs to be. I mean, how many people have to walk around with a limp for the rest of their lives, or how many families have to potentially go to a graveyard to visit lost loved ones?
And look, this is the consequence of Ireland having one of the most decentralised or centralised forms of government in the European Union. We have to make these cases to the likes of the TIA, often to Irish Water. We're looking at people in Dublin and to take on board our concerns because the decision making has been taken as far away from the citizen as possible. And this is the unfortunate frustration and reality of what we have to deal with. Look, I would love if these decisions were made by Donegal County Council, by those who know the road best, because we would never have gone on that long without a solution on that road. And look, I would hope that the Gardaí have a record of all the accidents that have happened, and they have been many, and they've been very serious. I hope that's been relayed to the TIA, and whoever the decision maker is down in Dublin will take that on board and act. But
yeah. I mean, there's probably not half a dozen serious areas that need addressing, and a lot of it's not big money, it's actually just will, and we know them, and unfortunately we've seen people injured or killed and yet nothing has been done about it. That doesn't feel right. Anyway, thank you very much, Councillor Jack Murray. We'll see what the listeners think. The proposal is, in the absence of the TAI doing anything with that junction at Burt Chapel, which I think anyone who's come up the Slab Road will know, you feel like you're dicing with luck in pulling out of that. It's seen numerous crashes and often high speed, obviously, because of the speed of the traffic on that road. Do you believe a one-way system whereby you would turn down onto the Slab Road, but if you were coming from Burt or Buncrana, for an example, you'd go to Bridge End and then up that main road? I've no issue with that. Sometimes I do. I think psychologically the Slab Road feels shorter, so if I feel like, you know, if I feel like time isn't on my side, I do feel the Slab Road is shorter, and that's where your sat nav will send you as well. But what do you think? Would you like to see a one-way system? And it would be one way towards Buncrana using the Slab Road. What about traffic lights at that junction? Why not a roundabout? Well, you see, this is it. I mean, we're at the point where TII, the Transport Infrastructure Ireland, formerly the NRA, they're saying that we're not going to do anything on there in the near future. So what Councillor Murray is saying is the Slab Road's under council control. They could potentially make it one way, and that's one way to address the issue in the absence of the TII seeing it as the major problem many do. The issue with the road is human behaviour, and there's nothing we can do to make it safer, because statistics in Donegal show drivers in Donegal don't learn. There's cars, there's driver behaviour, there's the road infrastructure. Those are the three factors. The drivers always get the condition of the car, the driver, and the road. You know, there's an awful lot of penalties to ensure our cars are in good nick. And also there is a responsibility from the TAI, the local authority, to ensure the roads are safe. And then there is the driver. I think we need to start sharing out the responsibility a bit more as well. A lot of us are very, you know, careful drivers, but we do have to encounter very dangerous junctions. Excuse me. What is Jack Murray waffling about the Slab Road? Well, it's not waffling. I mean, there's lives at risk here too, so it's not waffle, but I take your point if you don't agree with him. What's Jack Murray waffling about the Slab Road? Nothing wrong with it. The price of fuel goes a long way. Well done, Jack. How about you and your pals sort out the Mill Bridge? Staying on that road, regarding Councillor Murray's suggestion to make the Slab Road one way, how would this work with local farmers who work the land on both sides of the road? Yeah, that is a problem. And I think really what his position is, and it's, you know, if you maybe need to tease it out fully before bringing it to the public's attention, is that obviously there are issues that would have to be teased out. I noted yesterday, and I've done it a few times, where I still say at the end of the programme, coming up after the 12 o'clock news, it's funny, still conditioned to think that we finish at 12. Have you, the listeners, got used to it yet, I wonder, that the earlier start? Has it become more normal now? Because I think I must be going mad. For me, still, I still think I finish at 12. And then when I hear the guys go, it's the news at 11 o'clock, I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, sorry, I've just said 12 again. My apologies. I will eventually perhaps get used to it. I've kind of stopped saying the name of the programme because I will Stop saying the name of the programme because it's easier than saying the wrong name, if that makes sense. I agree with your last interviewee. Early intervention is key to health and justice. The government, etc., and its department preached this but never implemented. The health crisis assessment, operations, diagnosis, lists, etc., need for housing, school and infrastructure built too late. Family justice assessment for domestic abuse and parental alienation go on and on forever, all causing more pain and distress, worsening people's lives unnecessarily. The government know this but sit on their hands and firefight when it's often far too late. Like, I mean, I have no doubt, I think, that, you know, the powers that be, certain ministers, whether you think the government collectively is doing the right thing or not, do want to make changes. And I think that's been demonstrated when they can do something that they have absolute control over. I would say, and maybe you have to wait until it's in their memoirs, that it must be very difficult to get things done with the system that we have. You know, so you see a problem, you see a solution, but you try and implement that solution, and people go, oh, it's not that easy. Or, oh, well, what about this or what about that? And I would imagine it might be really quite frustrating as a minister, because I think even if you have the best will in the world, maybe it's very difficult to actually get across or what you want to do or make the changes that's necessary. Maybe I'm being too sympathetic, but I would imagine if you could speak to them off the record, that's something that they might say. Our children with additional needs are being disabled by the state and our government. A fight for diagnosis, a fight for intervention, a fight for support, a fight for school places. I have no confidence in our government, says this listener. And, you know, it's the fight. It's the fighting, having to fight for your child to get equal treatment to another child. You know, it's very unfair. On the issue of EVs, he hasn't stole the electric. The transaction ends when the plug is removed. It's impossible to start another charge without submitting details. I've had an EV for 5 years, Sean. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate your feedback. I think our Stephen, who it was, I think he wasn't sure. The card was emptied, but it could have been emptied on his fill. And I think that's why he wasn't overly concerned about that. So what you're saying, if you're in a fast charger, you hit the emergency stop, disengage it from the car that's being charged, connect it to yours, you have to begin a transaction again. Is it perhaps it's similar to when you depress that little piece of metal on a petrol or diesel pump, for that matter? The proposed one-way slab road means traffic from Buncrana to Letterkenny, Buncrana to Derry, and Derry to Buncrana, and Letterkenny to Derry are all converging at the roundabout in Bridge End. Traffic lights at the slab junction would calm traffic near Burt Chapel and the Green On Hotel and make the juncture safer. Interesting point. Put in a speed camera before Burt Chapel on the other side. That'll slow cars down. Yeah, but it would only slow them down to 100. I think Jack Murray, Councillor Murray, claimed that the speed limit through there was 100. It drops down to 80, but I think that's further up. Doing that for years, I never go up the slab. I only come down it. It's very simple. Common sense seems hard to find this last while. Don't change anything about the slab road. Other important issues to be seen to, in my opinion, says a listener. Another, Jack's idea does sound good for the slab road, but traffic going to Derry is going to have to go right at the Burt Chapel, which is a fast and dangerous road, which is more dangerous. A roundabout and traffic lights wouldn't work, but what will happen to the traffic at the chapel now? Fair play to Jack for trying. I have to admire him. There's no easy solution. Last one on that before we move on. Talking about dangerous junctions, the crossroads in the middle of Kilmacrenan is the worst I've ever come across. I take my life in my hands coming from Milford to try to turn towards Creasler to cross over to Churchill. For a junction in the middle of a town, the speed is frightening. It is crazy. I was coming down there. I don't think I've sped much through it, but I'm not an angel. I don't know. Maybe I did. But I became far more aware of it when I was speaking to a gentleman who was talking about cars flying through it, and I genuinely make a genuine effort to make sure I'm well under the speed limit. But my word, I had a bus up my backside, and I presume they've got deadlines as well, a bus up my backside as if I was absolutely crawling it. So people are well used to flying through that. It is an incredibly dangerous junction, and we had nearly a fatal reminder of that not so long ago involving a motorcycle. Right, we all have a great love and a great interest in Glenveagh Castle, don't we? And we want to see it at its max. There's great staff out there doing great things, working on a 100-year-old plan, a 100-year plan to try and get it, you know, more of a sense of what Donegal is in terms of our real agriculture and trees and all that kind of stuff. I couldn't be start something that I couldn't be involved in the end of. But anyway, Glenveagh Castle, guided tours, staffing generally speaking. The last update we had, they were looking for more staff, and the lack of staff was impacting what they could do. Here we are again, 2026. Micheál Colm McGillanaspe, good morning to you. Máirgín Way and Wiltu Gamay.
Gamay, Greg, agus Gamayhigat, agus the Dodgeistery.
What is the situation as far as you can determine? What concerns do you have, or what clarification are you seeking?
Well, look, I suppose part of our MD that I represent, there's a part of Glenveagh, the estate is in the grounds, and I'm very lucky in some sense, and I would prefer if the castle was as well. But the visitor centre is, so I would do a lot of engagement, a lot of work with Glenveagh, and you're 100% right when you say about their staff. Their staff are absolutely second to none, from tour guides to cleaners to the you know, yeah, the staff is amazing. And I suppose for myself, who's a very avid Gaelic speaker, it's fantastic the work that has been carried out in Glenveagh, what promoting the language as well, not just for the visitors, but for the staff itself. But the difficulty that I'm having here is the same difficulty that the staff and management, I believe, are frustrated with, is the fact that the castle is closed still. Here we are, you're correct, 2026. We thought that the government would have, the minister and the civil servants would have moved to relieve the issue. The issue is staffing. I believe it's staffing. We're closed on a Monday and on a Friday. And when I was out there just lately, you know, a huge number of people there. There were buses there. There was a lot of foreign accents there. And people coming from a far distance to visit the castle, to see the grounds, the ecology work that goes on in the castle, and a wide range of other things that comes along with the estate. And the idea that we are right now at the very beginning, last week, I think, saw the beginning of the tourist season, and we're all waiting for the cuckoo to land, which officially will launch the tourist season.
Two of them on this call. What I was going to say to you is this, though. Like, say, for instance, you know, you're lucky enough to head to Paris, and you know, part of that trip invariably would be a trip to the Eiffel Tower, and you rolled up to it, and it was like, well, I'm sorry, it's closed today. Staffing issues. Like, you would think it was a laughing stock, wouldn't you? Yet here we have one of the biggest attractions. We have knowledge of Mondays and Fridays, but if you're travelling the Wild Atlantic Way, you're not going to try and schedule hitting Donegal to exclude a Monday and a Friday. Tourists must be scratching their heads going, what? It's not open? Why?
Well, first thing I would say is that I've been to Paris quite a good number of times. I'll be back there speaking again in June. And I've never done the Eiffel Tower trip. And the Eiffel Tower wouldn't be a touch on what we have here, what all is grandeur of steel. But no, it wouldn't be a touch on what we have. And I'm very biased in that. But no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, they won't. If you're leaving Hong Kong, or if you're leaving Japan, or if you're leaving anywhere else around the globe, and you're coming to Éireann, you're excited about meeting the people, you're excited about our heritage, our culture, who we are, and the history, especially the history. We're just after celebrating an anniversary day again, maybe celebrating is not the word, commemorating the evictions, and people do travel, and people have an interest of that period of time, and other countries can obviously relate to that because of their own imperialist experience, and to find that the castle is closed, it's not acceptable, and to find that the investment going into, not just because it brings thousands and 20s and 30s and 40s and 100,000 people to our shores, it does far more work than that there, far more work, and the idea that the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government believes that it's not important enough to invest the funding that we have.
Yeah, I'm not giving the government a pass, but the National Parks and Wildlife Services have a fund, and I would say there's other counties where they wouldn't dream of shutting down major facilities for fear of a backlash. So they have a fund, and they don't see fit to meet, like, the management down there are not looking for staff to play tiddlywinks. They're looking for staff to fulfil the needs of Glenveagh, right? So I just don't think this happens in other counties. I don't think we have to fight to have Greenia and Avalia available to tourists. I don't think we have to fight. They have to fight to keep, you know, some place in Kerry open all week round. It just seems to be quite uniquely a problem we have here, that our most amazing natural resources are it's a struggle to have them available for our tourists or locals or to even to properly fund them. Do you know what I mean? Like, why the NPWS won't put someone on so I can ask those questions, but they're not saying they're not looking at it.
And that's a difficulty. Like you mentioned Green and Allen there. I'm actually a very, very regular to Green and Allen. I'm generally up there usually every month or every 6 weeks, genuinely. I just have a thing. And if that was anywhere else, there would be a different approach to it. And the same way as in Glenveagh, where they had a huge intensive public consultation for the county to put forward their hopes and aspirations. You know, I can invest a fair bit into it when that was going on. And like one of the things is to have slash it on the mountain road and their hopes and aspirations. And also I submitted the Chahadoon that belongs to the Guinness family now, which I believe should be taken off them and put into state ownership. And where I was talking about maybe looking to engage with the family there to use that grounds, like 5,000 plus acreage. And look, there is a plan there. There's a committee or there's a management there and the staff there that is hugely dedicated to their work. It's not just a 9-to-5 job. It's frustrating for them when they see that the footfall is coming and the investment isn't there. The idea that we're not getting the staffing that is needed, the idea that the castle needs colossal amount of investment. I mean, like, huge money needs to be invested into that castle. I don't know if you've been in the castle lately or not, but you know, we see it in the rooms, the damp and the decay. It's huge, and that's not how we preserve a very, very ancient building.
Well, what they're saying, what NPWS is saying, is Glenveagh National Park Visitor Centre and Castle Gardens remain open daily, and the National Park is open to visitors to explore the stunning landscape and enjoy the many different trails. Glenveagh Castle is closed to tourists on Mondays and Fridays, and our nature education programme continues, but at a reduced capacity. So we're asking less staff to do more, which must be quite disheartening. I know they love their work, but it must be quite disheartening. So they're effectively saying, yep, that's right, that's the way. That's the situation.
Yeah, and where the difficulty here is, and I'm not exaggerating this to be populist, I'm not. We could be seeing the castle close. The very fact that the government has neglected over many, many years the finances that is needed to build the castle to where it needs to be, to maintain what they have, it's not acceptable. And look, yes, we all are well used to how the government treats us up here and forgets all about us. And I think, you know, the saying goes, the forgotten county. I just think we're not the forgotten. They know we're here. They just don't care. And for me, I just think looking out at the fantastic work from Costa Ferber, the Luigia, right up to Mignolaban, that whole Glendone, that whole area there with Glenveagh, I just think that there's a unique opportunity there to do far, far more. But the idea that the staff are expected to do far, far more than what they should be, it's not acceptable.
I would just like for it to be established. I don't know how, but I might try and find it out myself. What other NWPS facilities around the country have restricted visiting times due to resource issues? Are there, maybe there's one in every county. I doubt there's very many.
I'm not being disrespectful to other counties. Need that be there to Cork? But that's not my interest.
Being singled out for not getting the money, not getting the staff, that makes the argument to try and address that imbalance stronger. Everyone has their own approach.
What we need is strong voices at the table. What we need is pressure being put on the minister and the senior civil servants. It's not fair to expect the management or staff to work 24/7. None of us expect anybody to do that. But the idea that they're still trying to keep going as much as they possibly can. It's not fair. It leaves, look, we saw a lost opportunity for a long period of time there where you couldn't even pay to go on the bus or go into the at the castle because the system was down, massive loss of revenue.
There was something funny about
you're
that.
Right, maybe you're right when you say, you know, does that happen in other places? I don't think it does. And if it does, well, it should be corrected. But what needs to happen is that the minister needs to come to Donegal, have a visit of the castle and reassure the staff and management and us as the wider community that they're not allowing the castle to crumble.
I must move on. Thank you very much for your time. That's independent councillor Micheál Colin McGillan Asperg. Local Enterprise Office Donegal have announced the teenage entrepreneurs who will represent Donegal at this year's Student Enterprise Programme National Final on Thursday the 7th of May next month. The programme, which is the largest student startup programme in the country, supports students to create, design and market their own businesses. And the winner of the senior category of this year's County Final of the Student Enterprise Programme was Shay. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning, how are you?
Thank you very much for joining us. Right, you're from St. Columba's College in Stranorlar. So talk to me about your creation, I suppose.
So my business is SMD Detailing. So it's my Valton and Detailing Company. I've always had an interest in cars. So I love it, and it's all deep cleaning of cars and restoration of cars.
Right, so, and this is like almost a concourse level. You're going in deep, aren't you? Right, inside, outside, paint touch-ups, the whole lot.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Right, and how long have you been doing that? I mean,
I used to do it as a bit of a hobby through the summer last year, and I started up my business in September. So when I started my enterprise program in school, my teacher told me to turn a hobby into a business, and it hit my mind straight away.
Yeah, so, you know, some of us, when we think we're looking after our cars, right, but we scrape the living daylights out of the paint and put the circles and all that kind of stuff. You can fix and address that.
Yeah, I can. So it's called a paint correction. So I use it's called a dual action machine polisher. So it slightly sands down the clear coat of your paint to leave a smooth finish and get rid of all them imperfections.
And then can you do anything then that sort of locks it in and protects it to try and limit any damage going forward?
Yeah, so there's a wax and a ceramic coating, and so they're two very different things. So the wax will repel water and stuff, but a ceramic coating is a very hard protective coating that can last up to 10 years. Just locks in that finish.
And brilliant. And how active are you? Like, I mean, obviously you're studying as well, right? So yeah, and you're at school. So is this what you do on your weekends or what?
So I get a half day in school on a Wednesday, so I'll take cars on Wednesdays and on Saturdays and Sundays. And yeah, I'm flat out at the moment.
Brilliant. Waiting list and all.
Yeah, waiting list next 3 dates are in 5 weeks' time.
Unbelievable. Right, and how long does it take you to do your average job? That's what I know, there's going to be different elements that need doing, right? But
yeah, so the average job is just the ordinary valet. So it's the deep cleaning of them.
You're not one of them out on Wednesday.
Yeah, so The average car will take anywhere between 4 and 8 hours, depending on the size and condition of the car. Yeah.
And patience. Where do you get the patience from? Because that's what would do my head in, you know, the start of something and having the commitment to spend 8 hours on it.
Yeah, my dad always says that to me, that he wouldn't have the patience to do it. But I really enjoy it, and I think it's the interest of cars that carry me through it.
Yeah.
And it's just the satisfaction of transforming somebody's car.
What's the nicest car you've worked on? What make?
I done a lovely Porsche Panamera one time.
Wow.
I done Range Rovers are lovely to do, and nice BMWs.
Rovers are massive.
Yeah, they're big to do, but it's all the nice leather and the nice quality carpet. It's just enjoyable to clean.
Really? Okay, yeah. Brilliant stuff. I love it. And the name of the business is, again, SMD Detailing. Shay McDevitt, makes sense,
that's
doesn't
it?
Right. And is this something, I mean, I was going to say, it is a business. Right,
yeah.
So currently it is a business. Do you anticipate continuing after school or...?
Well, I do see big potential in the business. Yeah. I would like to continue this for as long as I can. And I think
it could be your career business, effectively.
Yeah. And I can also see it transforming into something bigger, like an auto body shop or something, that I can like do modifications.
Well, it's clever, you see, because people who work on engines, you know, they're going to be in bother in 10 years' time when everything's electric, right? But they'll still need the carpets and the metal and the windows done. So you're clever. You're clever in that regard, no doubt. We are also joined by Danny Doherty of Loretto Letterkenny. You were the winner in the intermediate category, Danny, as you know. I'm just letting our listeners know. So what is your product, your business?
I do a service which is face painting for young children or any age, for festivals, events and birthday parties.
Wow, okay.
So I have a younger sister who's 3 and a half and she's very cute. And she has very sensitive skin. So when we were at events, she couldn't get her face paint done.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
And she loves it. She loves being making believe. And I just love children so much. So I was kind of like, right, this needs to change. Like, we can't be at events and people not getting something that they want done. So I use a brand called Snazaroo, which is made for the children's skin, and it's sensitive skin, and I use sensitive face paint wipes, and I go to people's birthday parties. It can be in their house, it can be in the community centre.
Yeah.
And the minute my birthday parties have been in the town.
That's Letterkenny, right? Yeah.
In Letterkenny, but hopefully in the future, I'm hoping to
branch out.
I'm cycling at the minute.
Well done to you.
So I've just invested in a trailer.
Well done.
It's a trailer that 2 children can fit in, but I'm using it to bring all my stuff with me to birthday parties.
Danny, it's fantastic because to keep your sister included and other kids with sensitive skin, I think it's wonderful that you found a product and a system and a way that even children with sensitive skin can get involved, right? Especially if they love, dressing up and all that kind of stuff. But is that your selling point or a bonus, right? Because you're just doing face painting anyway, right? Is it the fact that your products are very good for children's skin? Is that a bonus or the selling point, if you get where I'm coming from?
It's kind of more of a bonus.
Yeah, like, I was thinking.
For everybody. Face painting is for everybody. I still love face paint myself. To do it on me, it might not be the bluey characters, but it's still pretty. I still love it. And I love that art side of things. I actually don't do art in school. But I love doing it at my house, and I just love that you can be anything.
That's what I was going to ask you, right? So you are artistic, are you?
Yeah.
So you would have a bit of a flair for it to create what you're creating on someone's face.
Yeah. No, it was a decision between art and business.
Right.
And I went for business, and I love business so much.
Excellent. Well, they do. I think it's a great decision because you've got the art in the bag, right?
Yeah.
So you might as well get the business acumen to go with it.
Yeah. Our business in our school is amazing. Like, everything we learn in the classroom, now I'm able to put it in, and we've learned budgets and everything, and it's really helpful. It's really busy now because I'm obviously still in school and everything.
But you see, you're perfectly set up if you so wish, because as we come into the summer as well, there's a lot, maybe events in the park or festivals or what have you. I mean, can you just turn up at events, or do you need to be booked, or how does that work?
People book me on my Instagram page.
Yes.
Which is Danny's Magic Brush, Danny spelled D-A-N-N-I, and it's all lowercase and no spaces. So if anyone wanted to follow me, that would be great.
Brilliant, get on it. Danny's Magic Brush.
But, so people DM me on there, or on my business cards, my number will be on them, which I've put in local places around.
Fantastic. And because you're younger, do you feel you have to prove yourself a bit more so that they have to see your work to realise, oh, no, I'm pretty good at this. This is a business here. I'm not messing.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Because there's a few other face painters in the town, and they would work with people, and they're amazing. But they've actually been really helpful. But yet, sometimes when people come, they're like, how good is she actually going to be? But no, everyone's been really helpful, really supportive.
What kind of paint jobs are children getting? What's popular at the moment?
Bluey. I've done Bluey about 50 times.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loves Bluey. But then you have the classics. They just never go out of
style. Who are the classics? What are the classics?
Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, Spider-Man's brilliant.
The princesses. They just never
And
change.
When you're at home and you're working on yourself?
I do festival sides on myself. And
okay,
then
cool.
My sister is like my little person who just wants their...
And is she good? She's got good patience.
Oh, yeah, she'll sit for days. Yeah. She'd just let me paint her face for hours on end.
More patience.
Yeah.
Okay. We also have with us, waiting patiently, Colin Boyle from Ross's Community School. Colin, congratulations. And congratulations to all of you, by the way, because you're already all brilliant and you're already all winners, right? But Colin, talk to me about the business that you're involved in. There's a few of you, isn't there? And you've kind of found yourself as the spokesperson.
Yeah, there's three of us. We are Evercling Sports. We make a football boot clinging bundle that helps you cling.
Get it over here to have a look at that while you're talking. Go on.
This is it, right?
Yeah.
Pass it off.
Okay. No, there's the instructions there.
I can work it out.
We make a football boot clinging bundle that helps you cling boots after a match or a game, so you're not having any smelly smell or dirty bits of grass or muck in your house after.
So in relation to the brush that I'm holding up here, did you have to design this or...?
No, we got them ordered in and yeah. We got the soap bottles from Kelly Hygiene.
Yeah, there you are. That's down. And how important is the product inside the bottle, Colin? Like, how effective is that at cleaning? Is there something special about it? Or
It's just ordinary soap, but really? It works very well once you get all the muck off and, like, the wee brown muck stains on your boots.
Yes.
It can work for shoes, work boots, horse riding boots and all that.
Yeah.
And then you just rinse it off after done that, you done cleaning.
And this brush, do you load the product into the brush?
Yes, you take off the cap.
So you don't have to... So in other words, you take this off. So in other words, it's all in the one motion. You're cleaning mm-hmm. and the soap is dispensing all at the same time.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. And how did you come up with this idea? I presume it's kind of obvious, isn't it? You see a problem, mm-hmm. you find a solution, right?
So we came up with an idea because...
That's brilliant, Colin. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We came up with an idea because we wanted to do something with Sporty. We had several ideas, but... We asked around to the teachers in our class and we thought of a brush, and all the parents in our school thought that's brilliant because the smell and the dirtiness yeah. coming into the cars and houses be bad.
I'm going to give you a bit of an insight into this as a parent, though. Do you know what the real problem is? Things that shouldn't be used to clean boots being used to clean boots. I'm thinking yeah. dish brushes, the brushes for cleaning nails. Mm. The cloths for wiping surfaces, right? Not for cleaning your plumbing boots. So I think that's what's great too for mums and dads, in that this is a specific kit mm-hmm. you can own, and that's its use. And it's easy to clean up then after you've done your business, right?
Yes. You just wrench it over and that's it done. You can clean the muck from the brush then, and you can put it back in its box or wherever you want to leave it.
Well done. And it's the bristles are long enough too to accommodate studs and all that, or the deep tread on boots. It's all been well thought through, yeah. hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. And are you selling them at the moment, or is it coming to market, or what's the story?
We were selling them at the RCS Christmas Craft
Fair. Well done.
And the RCS Student Enterprise Programme. And we've been selling it to students and teachers and parents around Dunloe.
Yeah, there are different kits out there, but I can't think of one specific that's designed that can cross over so many different, mm-hmm. you know, that's not just for trainers and it's not just for, I mean, you can use that for anything, mm-hmm. presumably. And what's the name for the company?
Our company's called Evercling Sports.
Evercling Sports, which is brilliant. And it's yourself, Joey McGee, Aaron Mort. Is it Aaron he pronounces?
Yeah,
Aaron. Aaron Mort. All from the Ross's Community School for their business, Everclean. Right, Shay, what's next then for you guys? Right, you're already winners, as I mentioned, and I don't mean that in any patronising sense. You've all three of you have fantastic businesses. So what happens next? Do you go on to represent the county or your school at a higher level?
Yeah, it's on into Mullingar now, the national finals are, and that's the next step now. It's the national finals. Representing Donegal.
Congratulations. So where do you work? SMD Date Detailing, where are they based?
I do it all at my house, but I also offer some mobile detailing.
Oh, yeah. So, fancy.
Yeah, so it's comfort of their own home.
And I'll tell you, if people are letting him work on a Porsche, they'll let him work on anything, so you must have a fantastic reputation, Shay. Danny, you are again on socials is where you're getting your message out. Your cards are out there as well. Just remind us of your business name, where people can find you.
So my business name is Danny's Magic Brush. That's also the name of my Instagram page, Danny spelled D-A-N-N-I.
Are you tired saying that? Are you having?
Yeah, I have to say that a lot.
And lastly, Colin, by the way, you're a fantastic spokesperson for the company. They picked the right fella. You've a great delivery. You know, you're a really good salesperson. There's no doubt about that. I'll have whatever you're selling. From the Rosses Community School, Everclean Sports, where can people find out more about you?
People can also find us on Instagram.
Brilliant.
That's Everclean Sports, lowercase.
Okay. And these are all excited for Mullingar then? Mm-hmm. These are all, you haven't never met before either. You're from different schools, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well done. Thanks so much for calling in. Got a morning off, right?
Yeah.
So it's all good. Well done. So proud he is. He's doing fantastic, and I'm sure everyone associated with you are. The future is bright. Right, so in Ireland, we have around about one TD for every 31,600 people. In Britain, for an example, it's one TD for every 107, or one MP for every 107,000. So we have quite a lot of TDs. John, you're of the view, perhaps, maybe, we have too many TDs. Am I right? Hello, John. Yes, yeah, sorry, I had the wrong fader because someone wrote the wrong number down. Go ahead.
Good morning, Greg. How are you this morning?
I'm fantastic, John.
Them young people were fantastic. Jesus, they were brilliant. I tell you what, they were just excellent, absolutely excellent. No, my point is, Greg, the situation, you know yourself, with the fuel and the price of heating oil and the price of everything, and it's going to have a knock-on effect on food and so on and so forth. But I think in this country we have far, far too many TDs for every county. Never mind the county, we have far too many people in the Dáil when 90% of the decisions that's made for our country are made in Brussels.
Uh-huh.
For example, we keep going on about Donegal being the forgotten county. How do you expect people in Brussels to know anything about Donegal? And that's where our decisions are. I know it might sound daft, but you listen to them, and I'm telling you now, the last couple of days you've seen them in the Dáil, you see the social media flicks coming up and them shouting across each other. And for me, it's embarrassing. It's a disgrace, because that's all it is. It's a TV show. And it's no different to watching Emmerdale or Carnation Street, because nothing comes out of it. The people of Ireland, the people of Donegal, or the people of all over the county get nothing from it. So,
See, John, can I explain how I feel about it? Because I'm apolitical. I don't have any political allegiance at all. When Sinn Féin announced the vote of no confidence, I was like, so what? What difference does it make? Because we know the government have, was it 16, the majority? They ended up with 14 in the end. The numbers are there. They're going to succeed, and it will fail. The vote of no confidence will fail. And I just thought it was just a big old waste of time. Now, others might say it's an opportunity for people to have their say, but the government's arguing black, the opposition's arguing white, and never the twain shall meet. The whole thing, it just seems like an absolute waste of money and time.
This is my point, Greg. You're 100%. I've never seen more money wasted in my entire life as what's wasted constantly in that Dáil. And I'm not joking, Greg, that you would think the two parties hate each other. At the end of the day, Greg, they're in having lunch and dinners afterwards, toasting each other for the great show they put on for everybody. Because that's what it is. It's a TV show. It's not fair to the people. They're making false promises to get votes. They're saying they'll do this and they'll do that to get the power to get in. As soon as they're in, nothing's done. Piers Doherty was on the other day shouting at what he's done wrong, and the people are standing up. The people, Piers, tell us what you would do if you were in power. Tell us the things that you would do differently, because I can't see how any of them are any good, and what they can do or what they're allowed to do from the EU.
We see that was the problem, John. That was the problem ahead of the last general election, you see. I mean, I think Sinn Féin were en route to do really well, but on some of the big issues that matter to people, they weren't the change that perhaps people thought they were, and that led to them having maybe not as good a performance as they expected, and a low turnout too, because people were nonplussed. They're like, well, what's the point?
What's the point? Exactly. This is the problem. The people are getting fed up. And it's so, so hard, Greg, because you ask anybody, how do we fix it? And there's not a solution. There's not a fix for it. But for me, it's a lot of wasted salary that could be going into our healthcare system or could be going into our education system. Like, for example, Greg, there's a perfect example. Them young creators was on there now with you on the radio, and you were saying the future's bright. Then we creators, thanks to our government and the way things are set up, will have to seek better lives in Australia, maybe, and Canada.
John, I And you know, yes, but I get where you're coming from, right? But I still think that this is the best country in the world. For right or wrong, I agree. I think there are opportunities and there are potential. My two young lads haven't had to leave. Well, one of them's down in Galway, the other in Letterkenny. The third one, we don't know what he's going to do yet. But my point is, and there's lots of young people still about, and I understand some are forced to emigrate, but do we not have to also point out there's a lot of good as well, John, whilst we try and fix what's going wrong? No, or am I being too optimistic?
No. There is some good, not a lot. Unfortunately, I wouldn't agree and say there's a lot. There's some goods going on, and it's fantastic, Greg, for you. And I think that's lovely. It's actually quite emotional to be able to see your children are able to stay at home, and I think it's great for you and it's great for Ireland. But there's thousands and thousands of creditors watching their children pull out every single day, looking and seeking better lives because there's not support, there's not things put into place for the young creditors here. Yeah. And Greg, I'm not saying this with any disrespect. I will always say this. We were always brought up with this attitude to life. As charity starts at home.
Yeah.
So therefore, look after our own first, Greg. Look after our own. Make sure our own's comfortable. Don't be sending millions to a pointless war. And I don't mean to sound negative. The reason why I'm calling it a pointless war is because on one side you've got the war going on, and on the other side they're building a multi-million ski resort with 12 hotels and all that in the same country. You know, I can't get my head around it, Greg. We went through a troubled time in Northern Ireland, and the people come into the other parts of Ireland to seek refuge and stuff like that. They didn't emigrate to different countries and get handouts and stuff like, you know, even though the Republic of Ireland was good to them. But they didn't have to leave the country. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, but John,
I'm not being negative to the creditors.
No,
right?
You're not right. And I understand that. And I know there doesn't sound like there's a bad bone in your body. I get you. But you see, as soon as we start othering, is that not really part of the problem? So you'll get people who have jobs saying, oh, the people who don't have jobs are doing really, really, you know, it's better off you're not working. And maybe it is in some cases. Or, oh, you can't send money to Ukraine because we've got homeless here. Or look at the amount of money we're sending. But does that not take the heat off the government, for an example? Because as we know, we've got billions of euro in excess. Right? That's what we have. We have billions of euro in surplus. So it's about what that money is spent on inside the country, not that we're sending money away. Like, so rather than sort of talking about Ukrainian people or refugees or what have you, is that not taking the heat off the decision makers when there are billions there that they could use to fix an awful lot of what's wrong in the country?
Without a doubt. And this talk of them keeping money for a rainy day, Christ almighty, do we have to be flooded before they call it a rainy day?
You know what I mean? Yeah, I get you.
We're in a rainy day. We've been in it a long, long time. Listen, all I'm saying is it's cut back in the dial because 90% of the decisions is coming from Brussels. Do away with the percentage of which that money could be going into our education, going into our hospitals, going into our road structures, or going into... So my opinion is cut back, stop funding these lovely holiday homes because that's what we're doing, for people to stand and shout across a bench to each other and nothing ever done.
See, the thing about because I have to go and you make some good points, John, my suspicion is if there was an election tomorrow, you wouldn't vote because you don't know who to vote for. See, here
not
we go.
Not a hope in hell, Greg. Not a hope in hell.
But in not voting...
I wouldn't waste it.
The people who didn't vote... returned the status quo. That's the thing that happened.
Yes.
Because most people didn't vote.
Yeah. No, that's true. But Greg, what do you do? That's what's so hard. It's so hard to be on here talking to you, asking. I would love to be able to have somebody to come on with solutions. Not shout across or say, oh, you're doing this wrong. We know what they're doing wrong. We're the people. We're aware of what they're doing wrong. We don't need you standing on a TV show shouting across, telling them what you're doing wrong. Give us the solutions. Tell us what you would do different. Tell us how you would fix these problems. This is what I want. I want somebody that I can go, oh, I believe him. And not somebody that's going to shout across the bench and say, we'll do this, we'll do that. And then when it comes to elections, we'll do, oh, we'll give the pensioners this, and we'll give the healthcare this, and give that. And as soon as they're in power, 2 weeks later, everything's pulled back and changed.
Yeah.
That's a disgrace. That's, for me, It's so tough. It's a tough one, Greg, and I must admit, I wish to God I had the power to fix it. Or even more, I wish I had the Euromillion that I could leave it.
Just leave the rest of us. You just sod off, all right. Ironically, probably becoming an immigrant in another country. But anyway, thanks, John. Look after yourself. Right, I want to mention, by the way, that Relay for Life Donegal has the Boil the Kettle initiative this term. It's to raise money, of course. And there's a lovely event coming up on Saturday, the 18th of April. That's this coming Saturday. It's in Termin GEA Clubhouse between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. And by the way, to sort of add a sense of community, but also spreading the word, you're being asked to have a Boil the Kettle event and use the hashtag Boil the Kettle and share it out about the place. So it's at the function rooms at Termin GEA Clubhouse between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Saturday. Everybody is welcome, and donations of baked goods or other snacks are welcome there as well. So come along with your family and get a nice cup of tea or coffee with their hashtag Boil the Kettle fundraiser. Right, interesting programme as always. Thank you so very much to all of you who have listened and texted in and what have you. Your contribution, greatly appreciated. And we'll be back tomorrow morning to do it all again from 9 a.m.